Welcome to Horse First. This is a podcast about beginning with the horse, about paying attention before we explain and listening before we decide what something means, which, as it turns out, takes a bit more skill than it sounds. It's not about blame. It's not about being right. It's about widening the view and learning to carry responsibility without hardening. I'm Lockie Phillips. This is a space for curiosity, steady practice, and skill that keeps the horse at the center. Let's begin. Today I'd like to name a quieter form of dominance. There's a type of dominance that we don't talk very much about in the horse world because it doesn't look harsh and it doesn't look loud and it doesn't look like control in the way that we've been taught to recognize it. It looks like worry. It looks like overthinking. And listen, my name is Lockie Overthinking Phillips. It can look like someone trying very hard to get it right. And it often sounds like, I just want the horse to be okay. I'm trying to listen. I don't want to push them. And yet, despite all of that, the horse still feels crowded by us. They still feel managed. They still feel micromanaged even. They still feel organized around the human's internal state. And this episode is about, whoa, where did my Australia just come from? This episode is about horse people who are, and I say this without judgment, who are drowning in anxiety. Not dramatic anxiety, but the circuitous, looping, dead-end kind of anxiety. This episode's about you, if this is you, with the intention to talk about it, even though it's difficult, but it really matters that we're able to have these conversations together without shame spiraling, without feeling called out. We're just here to talk about it. So we're here to talk about the kind of anxiety that never quite resolves, the kind of anxiety that's, I will hasten to add, outside of a clinical diagnosis, because some folks actually have clinical diagnoses around anxiety, and I don't speak about someone with a clinical diagnosis that is of no control to them outside of, you know, prescription assistance, medicated assistance on that. But I speak about the kind of anxiety that fills the space between you and your horse with your thoughts and your concerns, your self-monitoring, even horse monitoring, and your self-correction. The space is filled with that. And how even when your intention is softness and kindness and empathy and practical quietness, that your anxiety can still dominate the room with the horse. This type of anxiety acts like an invisible center of gravity, a little bit like a black hole. Because it doesn't always look like outright panic. It often looks like constant self-evaluation, constant self-assessment. You're checking, you recheck, you adjust, and then you second guess. What if this is too much? What if I'm missing something? What if I do the wrong thing? These questions feel responsible. They feel caring. But when anxiety becomes the center of gravity to your horsemanship, everything else starts orbiting around it, especially the horse. The horse begins to respond not to clarity, but fluctuation. Not to intention, but to uncertainty. And eventually, you will transfer that anxiety onto the horse. Human anxiety and anxious people, again, ask me how I know. We often think that we're making ourselves smaller so that the horse has more space, that these questions, this self-assessment of checking, rechecking, adjusting, and second guessing. We believe we're making ourselves smaller, and we believe that minimizing the self and maximizing our assessments is empathy or compassion and giving space to the horse. But actually, internally, anxiety is expansive and expensive because it takes up time, it takes up attention, and it takes up critical, cognitive, decision-making space. And because horses are, oh my God, horses are exquisitely, exquisitely sensitive to nervous system regulation, they feel that. They feel how you've expanded the room to fill more of it, even though nothing overt is happening. The room becomes crowded with the human internal process. And this type of anxiety doesn't feel like dominance, which is why it's so hard to recognize. And that's why I'm talking about it and why it's really important and it really matters that we find it in ourselves to discuss it and see if that might be us or see if that might be a friend of ours and have a chat about it. Because it doesn't feel like dominance, but it still is. Because when we talk about dominance, we usually picture force and very forceful training, loads of mismatched pressure, abundant insistence, control, imposed control through outward manifestation of behavioral requests that look really obvious, maybe even too much. But dominance is an internal game that has an external costume on, but it's an internal game. Dominance is really about whose experience sets the term, whose experience sets the parameters here, whose experience drives the car, drives the machine, drives the process. And anxiety sets a lot of terms. An anxious person often unintentionally asks the horse to regulate the human's nervous system. You ask the horse to regulate you. You also will unintentionally ask the horse to provide reassurance through their behaviors. We will often unintentionally ask the horse to move in ways that relieve our uncertainty and give us confidence. And we'll often unintentionally ask the horse to pause, comply, or perform so that we can feel okay again. And none of this is malicious, but it is directional and impactful. The horse's experience becomes secondary to our personal need for resolution and comfort. Even softness can dominate when it's driven by fear rather than clarity and confidence and practicality. Even hesitation can transform from a healthy ability to be discerning and can transform into something that controls rather than communicates. Because you keep the horse suspended in a solution of human indecision. This is why some horses feel steamrolled and flattened around anxious people, not pushed, but indirectly micromanaged into invisibility. I told you it's tough to talk about, and it matters that we do. So I call this a dead-end loop. We think without moving forward. It's circuitous. The anxiety is circuitous and it takes a particular shape and form. It kind of goes like this. You notice something, you worry about it, you adjust, you doubt the adjustment, you undo the adjustment, you reassess, and then you worry again. There's a lot of motion internally and very little progress. From the outside, it might look thoughtful, but from the inside, it feels exhausting. And from the horse's perspective, it's maybe I would like to invite you to come and learn with me inside the EH school. This is a low-cost, high-value, flexible membership for horse people who want more than just quick fixes and louder answers. Inside, you will find a growing video library, a thoughtful off-social media discussion space, and live coaching calls with myself and often with my team, all designed to help you get to the heart of what's really happening in your horsemanship. This is not about following a method. It's about building clarity, skill, and confidence with the horses always placed as the first priority. If you're looking for a steady place to learn, reflect, and progress your practical skills without force of horses or overwhelm of yourself, I hope you will come and feel at home with us in the EH School. You can find the sign up by the link in the show notes, or you can visit emotionalhorsemanship.com and navigate to the EH School sign up. Stabilizing, because that clarity doesn't arrive, the answers never arrive, the aids never arrive, the questions don't land, the cues don't land, and more importantly, the relationship doesn't land, much less the horse. Also, the human, we don't really quite land anywhere. The cues change, your aids change, your expectations shift, the emotional tone of the training can go up and down. But horses need somewhere to land. They are practical, earthbound creatures that look for that stability. They don't look for perfection, and they don't look for sort of an arrogant certainty, but they look for congruence, coherence. And the type of anxiety we're discussing now often mistakes that internal motion that goes round in circles for a functional process of training and discovery. We often mistake that for our responsibility and responsiveness to a situation with a horse. But we're actually creating responsiveness without any integration. It's beyond being reactive to a horse. We just start going in circles and we don't land and we don't go anywhere. And when that happens, the horse is left carrying the weight of the human's unresolved internal loop. So horses still feel dominated when they are in these dynamics with people. And this is the part that can be really, 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 really uncomfortable to hear. Because even when anxiety looks gentle, it still occupies disproportionate space in the relationship. The horse doesn't get to just be themselves. They're constantly being checked on, read into, adjusted around, and monitored for signs. And there's an indirect request that they regulate the person. And this constant attention can feel invasive to a horse. Horses don't experience anxiety as care or support. They experience it as pressure, mismatched pressure without any direction. The pressure to reassure, the pressure to be okay, the pressure to not trigger the next spiral. So the horse adapts. They dull. They comply. They reduce expression. And sometimes they do the opposite of that. They become animated. They push back and they become manic in their expressiveness. You get this high-low thing happening. Anytime I've noticed a high or a low horse centered around someone who describes anxiety as an overwhelming presence in their horsemanship, I've become aware that this is the dynamic that we're in. I just notice it. And sometimes I'm in a position to pass that noticing on to the person and help them notice it too. And sometimes I'm not in that position. And when I'm not in that position, it's not my task to bring that noticing to the forefront for others. And it's really important that we understand that horses in this dynamic, when they are in this dynamic, if they look calm, they're not really calm, because that calmness, that expression of calmness, it costs them. It's expensive. It's too expensive for them. And if they're responsive or active, they're not really responsive, because that type of responsivity is too expensive. It's unsustainable. That's not freedom. That's not neutrality. That's not connection. It's just a quieter form of dominance, one that the horse world hasn't trained itself to recognize yet, because it doesn't matter which side of the argument you're on, whether dominance is good, bad, or indifferent. I think there's the argument that dominance doesn't exist. I believe that saying that, which I have said in the past, and I've evolved on this standpoint, saying that dominance doesn't exist is like trying to say gravity doesn't exist. Social dominance is a factor, especially in social animals. It just doesn't look like the way the horse world has talked about it, with this alpha beta situation, this pyramid hierarchical structure. I think horses run an extremely interesting, rich, varied, dynamic, ever-evolving, constantly changing social dominance, social hierarchy arrangements in herds. And most of the time, they're invisible to people who have been trained to recognize a top-down hierarchical structure. But I digress. This form of dominance is quieter and it's much harder to recognize. And that's why I think it matters that we talk about it, so that we can learn to recognize it. And if we can notice it, we can shift it. And if we can shift it, then we can improve things for horses, and then horsemanship can start being horse first. This form of quiet dominance is one that's rooted in fear, not force. So once we've noticed this, what actually helps? Now, I'm going to say something that might be easily misunderstood, but that's par for the course over here. I think what actually helps is shrinking humans back to their original size. I don't want us to minimize what we're going through, minimize our concerns, try to squash fears, or even stop people from thinking or assessing or adjusting or noticing. I just want us to shrink wrap back to our original factory size and factory settings. Because the answer to this is not about trying harder, and it's not even about eliminating that anxiety entirely. The shift is something like this. The human stops being the main event, not through your self-erasure, but through your regulation. And it doesn't mean the horse doesn't have a regulating effect on you. They do. But that starts being reciprocal. The horse is complicit in that and consenting in that, and a willing participant in the mutual regulation, rather than the horse almost assuming like a parental type force in your life. And that regulation, that nervous system literacy, shrinks this circuitous dominating anxiety back to a human scale, because then it allows you to make decisions without needing emotional resolution first. It replaces this constant checking in with just a steady presence. You no longer require confidence about your confidence before you're confident. I'll say it again. You no longer require or mandate from yourself confidence about your confidence before you're confident. You can just make a decision without needing that resolution first. All of this lets the horse's experience take up more appropriate space again and allows the horsemanship to be horse first. And this doesn't mean we ignore information. It means not letting fear narrate the environment. It means we listen to it and we're informed by it as far as safety and good, healthy, practical parameters, but fear is no longer narrating our story. And this clarity helps horses more than worry ever will. Worry is anxiety about things and decisions that haven't happened yet. As my dad would say, Lockie, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. And when you come to it, what if there's a really easy solution? And a friendly reminder, your clarity doesn't have to be perfect. Clarity can be opaque. That's what we're talking about. In fact, that's exactly what we're talking about. Shrinks back to a human scale so that you can just make a decision without emotional resolution. You can make a decision even if it's opaque. So to bring this to a close, if you're still listening, firstly, thank you for listening. I appreciate it. I'm glad that it's something that's held your attention. But if you recognize this in you, I want you to know there's nothing wrong with you. And if any part of this podcast has felt accusatory, allow me to apologize if that did feel accusatory. That's not my intention. If that is my impact, I'll think about that and I'll think about ways I can change that impact so I'm not having that impact on people. But if you do recognize this in yourself, there is nothing wrong with you. In fact, that's what this is all about, is saying there is nothing wrong with you. Anxiety is often the cost. It's the cost of caring in the horse world. It's the cost of, I'm going to swear now, giving a shit in an industry that typically doesn't allow you to give a shit. Anxiety is often the real human cost of caring in environments that just don't teach regulation or nervous system literacy at all, let alone emotional intelligence. However, that doesn't change the fact that horses don't need us always to be thinking more. Volume of thought is not necessarily what this is all about. Horses need us to arrive in our bodies, in ourselves, to be present enough that our internal weather doesn't become their working conditions. So here's the gentle question for us to sit with. Is my internal experience taking up more space than the horse's right now? This isn't a criticism of the self or of others. It's information. It's noticing. Because when the human comes back into proportion, horses breathe. Our horsemanship breathes. And it starts really moving forward. Thanks for listening, guys. I hope that was helpful. See you next time.